welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza. I'm joined by Dalton Del Don. Week 2 happens to be here as well. Before we get into it, let's talk some pre-show business. Hey guys, you can still join, even if you haven't yet, a Yahoo Fantasy League. Go ahead and do that. You can also, while you're at it, sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Plus. Give yourself a little edge over the competition. You can take it for a test drive with a free trial. All you have to do is go to yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. Boom. How quickly was that? Let's get to it. First game, real barn burner, Dalton. I hope you're excited. It is going to be lit. Bengals at Bears, baby. I'm being facetious.
Oh, yeah, you're Bears. Come on. You're not excited. Andy Dalton, I believe he's the only quarterback in football to not attempt to pass past 12 yards downfield in week one. It's unbelievable, man. All underneath stuff. What is the point? I get what the Niners are doing and why there's a decision there. I don't understand, Chicago. You got to help me out here. What's going on there?
I'm not going to pretend. Well, I think they're moving from, I mean, if you want my real take, I think that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are moving from a fear-based place, which is never a great idea. But they're terrified that if they break Justin Fields, who, let's be honest, they lucked into, then their careers and tenure in Chicago are donezo. And so, you know, don't let Aaron Donald break the kid. Let Andy have his swan song against his old team at Soldier Field. And then maybe let Fields in on a couple other packages against the Browns, because the Browns do have, you know, Myles Garrett. That's a tough matchup. We'll talk about that a little bit later in a different quarterback who will be facing him. And then week 4, la la la, you get the Lions. And if week 2 proves right, I think the Lions are going to be a get right team for a lot of other teams, particularly in the NFC North. All right, so that's my take. But here's my take on Andy Dalton. Like I mentioned, obviously, the narrative of him hosting his old team. It is worth mentioning, and we are asked every week to do these bold predictions, and I'm always kind of straddling the line between a bold prediction and someone being like, that's preposterous. Like, what, you're just wish casting or making stuff up. But sometimes if you say something that is likely to happen, you know, the trolls like to come a feedin' and say like, well, that's not bold, right? So this week I was like, you know what? Week 2, we're starting big. We're starting bold. Andy Dalton is a top, I couldn't say 15. I couldn't get myself to do it. Top 20 quarterback. Because, listen, Kirk Cousins threw for over 350 yards last week. And that's another, against the Bengals, I should mention. And that's another offense that wants to focus on the ground game and allow their defense to win matchups for them. So it is not impossible when we look at the deficiencies in the Bengals defense to see Andy Dalton, especially adding in the narrative bit, air it out a little bit. Now, I'm not saying anyone plays him in fantasy, but if you got really banged in super flex leagues, like you had Ryan Fitzpatrick, you weren't able to scoop Heinicke on Fab, really, people were just, maybe it's a deeper super flex league, then I do think for a spot start, if you are ever going to start Andy Dalton again for the rest of his life, this is the week to do it.
You do deserve, that's an absolute bold one too. I just checked his ECR and he is the stone last number 32 ranked by in the community. So top 20 would absolutely be a jump up. So I like it there. And you're right though, it is a tough mix to find what qualifies as bold, not getting called out, but yet also what is actual feasibly could happen. So I'm with you there. It's a tough, tough happy medium. But yeah, if Andy Dalton, that would be a fun storyline if he does it against his old team. Certainly guys with Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney would love to see it. Let me go back to the backfields on both these teams. I wish I had more Joe Mixon, who led all backs in opportunities week one, and more David Montgomery. Clearly this guy is just, it was not a product of an easy schedule down the stretch last year. He's very, very good running back in the NFL, and he looks like a possible workhorse with Tariq Cohen nowhere to be found. So I wish I had more Montgomery. He's one of those dead zone guys that's going to be better than that. I feel like confident enough to say that after week one, that Montgomery is a dead zone back that shouldn't have been there. He should have been a tier ahead of that.
A multidimensional talent. The O-line, obviously a mess in Chicago, but you have to imagine once Justin Fields shows up, there's going to be more opportunities for him because he is also a back who can catch passes, right? So whether it opens up holes for him or the occasional check down happens, because we are going to imagine there are fewer check down possibilities from Fields than there are from Dalton, right? Especially given the O-line. I still think that opens things up enough for Montgomery to continue to be really productive. So I agree with you there. I mean, we actually, to that point, we saw what sort of, how much Joe Mixon's efficiency improved once Joe Burrow was installed under center last year, right? He's not like he had another team with a really bad offensive line. Like his elusivity rating or his juke rating went down, but that's actually good because you don't want a running back that has to dodge all of these defenders all of their time because fewer boxes are stacked because, you know, they're more afraid of the quarterback. I want to talk about the receivers in Cincinnati just quickly. Ja'Marr Chase, 7 of 5 for 101 and a touchdown in the first. No slow start. I had anticipated it. A lot of people thought maybe he would be a wonky heading into the season. And he also led the receiving corps in snaps. 62 total with 34 on the outside, 25 in the slot. When I think about what Cooper Kupp, who is obviously a slot receiver, did to the Bears defense on Sunday night, and I also weigh the fact that Ja'Marr Chase is only $20 in Yahoo DFS, I think that this is a really big opportunity and spot for him. I know the presumptive thought is like, oh, this should be a Tyler Boyd game. And I do think Tyler Boyd's opportunities will increase. But I think, you know, when you look at how much time Chase spent in the slot, you see that like mathematically, he's doing all of the things and getting all the opportunities and should smash in this spot.
Yeah, Chase looks like an alpha, and his ADP should not have dropped based on those preseason drops. And I personally did myself a little bit, a couple spots, and that was just silly in hindsight. Tyler Boyd, better days will be ahead, especially in PPR, but his ADP was probably too high if Chase is a true alpha right away. And Higgins, who got carded at one point, I was so worried there. It was just cramped, so he's going to be fine. I think Higgins is in it for a big game, too. So, I mean, a big season, too. But, yeah, Chase looks fantastic, and who cares about those drops? And he's, right away, was very, very impressive, isn't it? $20 is absolutely, he's a DFS option.
Texans at Browns. I mentioned Myles Garrett versus it ends up being Tyrod Taylor, who surprised everyone, I think, in week one. Now, the Browns are going to be without OBJ for a second week. They're also probably going to be without their left tackle, their right tackle, and their center. And yet, they're still favored per BetMGM by 12.5 points in this one.
Yeah, I like the Browns in this just the spot. I mean, Texans still, they're coming off a win, but they still have the worst roster in football. I know Tyrod Taylor played fantastic, and maybe they won't be as bad as everyone thought. But the Browns, conversely, are coming off a tough loss, but they're just so much superior, and I think Nick Chubb's going to go crazy. Yes, really big splits in wins and losses, and this is the biggest the Browns have ever been favored in Chubb's career. So I like to pay up for him in DFS. I still like the Browns setup here, but it's worth mentioning that once Wills went down last week, that's when the offense really struggled. So they're banged up on the offensive line, but there's some depth there, and I think they take care of business in this one. What do you think, Liz?
I mean, that's also why you mentioned paying up for Chubb, which I'm all for. $34 in the Yahoo game, he is one of the most expensive running backs for the week. I like Kareem Hunt in this one because you mentioned the O-line and you mentioned the efficiency. And I know that I feel like Kareem Hunt could get a number of looks in the passing game. And he is only, for DFS purposes, $21. So I do want a piece of this backfield in DFS. And if I'm arranging my lineup in such a way, I think that Hunt is a great value. I mean, 61 yards and a touch in week one, I'll take that, you know?
Yep, he's a solid option for sure. And the Beckham situation is just so frustrating. There wasn't a hint of this all summer. It was all positive reports. At least we're known. Well, in one way, it's positive that we're told midweek, you know, he's not going to be available. We don't have to worry about it. Last week was frustrating because it was an afternoon game, too. But at the same time, it's like, he's already been ruled out. How long is this going to be before he does return? It's frustrating. I have a lot of Beckham, but you just got to stash him for now. And in the meantime, Jarvis Landry gets a boost for sure. And even Hooper as well, a little bit too, another extent.
I mean, they're working in Njoku at the same time. I mean, I put my eggs into that Hooper basket last week, and while he was efficient 3 of 3, you know, they're spreading it around a lot beyond Jarvis and the run game.
No doubt. And Anthony Schwartz in really deeper leagues or dynasty leagues, he looks like he's the beneficiary, not Donovan Peoples-Jones at downfield. But yeah, I think this team's going to bounce back in a big way. But definitely the injuries piling up right away on the offensive line is obviously not ideal.
And if ever there were a matchup to potentially be without three of your starting O-linemen, it's going to be versus the Texans and at home.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the Texans, great upset win last week, but I mean, against Urban Meyer, and this is still a bad roster. Remember, they traded Bradley Roby, their best, arguably their best defensive player, leading up to week one. I mean, this is a team in transition. It would not shock anyone if that was their only win of the whole season in week one.
Fair enough. I will say that on Eckler's edge, Austin, who obviously has familiarity with Tyrod, having been on the Chargers with him, particularly noted Taylor's athleticism and felt it was very underrated, his ability to extend plays. And I think that's probably because he's always hurt. Like, we can't, this is a bit of a revenge game for Tyrod too, we should mention, you know, and it was just interesting. Austin said, you know, keep an eye on the Garrett Taylor matchup, because if Taylor is back to health, I'm, you know, reading between the tea leaves here a little bit with what he said, but if Taylor is back to health, you're going to see a pretty decent matchup between his athleticism and Garrett's and his legs. So I am going to be watching the mobility that Taylor displays in this one to maybe gauge, just for DFS purposes moving forward in the Texans schedule.
Now, Taylor looked great. He was throwing some dimes last week. And for fantasy, the fact that he uses his legs and the game script, I mean, there's just going to be some garbage stats to having to throw. Mark Ingram, that's going to go down as his season high in carries last week. Taylor's playing, it really was really good in week one, both for fantasy, but also in real life too.
Rams at Colts is up next. I mean, Matt Stafford looked pretty sharp. It looks like the announcing crew could not stop talking about, like, what a bromance, what bedfellows McVay and Staff were. And I don't know if you've ever listened to that Flying Coach podcast with McVay. Mm-hmm. Like, McVay just totally gushing about when he was in Cabo, and then he had Shanahan on for an episode
or two.
And of course you did. Yeah, like, they were both like, oh my God, they're both like in Cabo at the same time, but didn't know it, trying to get Stafford. Like, it's a fascinating story. Regardless, it seems to be working. I think Matt Stafford took care of his old opponent in a new home quite handily. It was on primetime. Everybody got to see it. I think for fantasy purposes, right, like, we love, as Scott Pianowski says, the narrow passing tree. We love Cooper Kupp. He certainly seems to be Stafford's favorite target. Robert Woods is still the man. He can do all the things. He can block, which doesn't help for fantasy, but it keeps him on the field. You know, he can go outside, he can go inside, he can even, like he did last year, run in a couple of scores out of the backfield. So are you still thinking that Sony Michel is in the onboarding process of his Rams career, or do you think he's going to really eat into Henderson's opportunities?
For now, I just take a wait and see approach. Obviously, you can't use him after the usage last week one, but it makes sense. You know, he had just been traded there recently. It feels like to me that Henderson's going to be the clear lead back there until an injury strikes. I feel like Michelle's not going to be helpful for a flex, but absolutely could suddenly be an RB1 if injury strike Henderson. So he's just more of an upside backup to me. Stafford's considered, you know, the quarterback's quarterback. People love him. He does these kind of no-look passes all of Mahomes. He's underrated. What was up with your Bears defense, though? The Cooper Kupp had the most distance behind a defender in all of week one on that one place.
We got rid of a bunch of quarterbacks. Yeah, I mean, that was it. Like, they fleeced the secondary. But we gave up a lot of talent to the back half of the in the back half of the defense, and there you go.
Quickly, I'd say that the Rams, just that Robert Woods, something to pay attention to. His routes were down week one. Maybe, hopefully, it's just an aberration, but definitely you got to be excited if you have Kupp. And Tyler Higbee, with Everett gone, it looks like he's going to be the guy there with a better quarterback, with McVay calling plays. Higbee looks like a top five fantasy tight end moving forward.
What about the Colts? Like, the receiving core, congrats to you, by the way. You called it on this podcast a week ago. Zach Pascal, you said, was going to be a sneaky play. Correct. Take your victory lap. Everyone else on Twitter does it.
If only I had taken him instead of Brandon Ayuk in so many round fives in my leagues, you know?
I don't think you're alone there. I also think that it was Nyheim Hines who benefited very nicely from T.Y. Hilton's absence. He's only $14 in DFS this week. He converted 6 of 8 for 48. He ran 20 routes. That was the RB8 for the week. That is what you love. Like, that stat to me sung. It doesn't look like Jonathan Taylor, who, yes, carried the ball more times. I think the ratio was 14-9 between Taylor and Hines. He did see some work in the passing game, but it does still see, like, while Hilton is out, Hines is going to be running routes and working as a nice check down to Carson Wentz, not just Phillip Rivers. It looks like Carson Wentz and he have really nice chemistry. So it's also worth noting that the Rams gave up five of six catches to the Bears running backs last Sunday night.
Yeah, that is the news, is Carson Wentz is apparently willing to throw to his backs, just like Rivers was. You say Hines, but I say it was a great news for Taylor, too. 7 targets. Mm-hmm. Taylor had a touchdown called back as well. I very encouraging, especially PPR leagues, if you're a Taylor guy with those targets. So Wentz throwing to his backs is very, very good news for both of them. I'm just waiting for Taylor to erupt. I'm just such a believer in him. I know this isn't a great matchup, but I guess David Montgomery had some big runs last week. But yeah, I mean, rolling with Taylor happily. And bigger games to come for sure for your guy Pittman too, by the way. I mean, yes, it was Pascal last week, but Pittman's still the guy in the Colts moving forward.
He'll get in there. Let's talk about the Bills at the Dolphins. Josh Allen, I have to imagine, even though he's traveling for this one, is going to be coming out hot. Gabriel Davis, it's worth mentioning, you know, he tweaked his ankle. He did score a touchdown, but he is going to play in this one. I really like Gabriel Davis, even though his volume is not particularly voluminous, but because he gets those high value looks. Like Josh Allen immediately at the top of last year, even though Davis was a rookie, trusted him in the red area of the field. And you're seeing that again this year. I don't know if the Bills are going to be trailing as much as they were last week, if that was a bit of an aberration, if TJ Watt just like took his bag and like busted it over Allen's head. And so we're not going to see Allen like press as much, but you still have to imagine that like this is an offense that's going to pass a lot because of the play caller behind it. And I don't know about you, but I'm getting like a lot of Beasley questions because of that.
Beasley 13 targets. Well, I wonder what the questions are. I mean, you have to like that. I mean, maybe the touchdowns out there are the yardage, but man, he's just going to be an underneath slot machine all year long as he's healthy. So Josh Allen is definitely an obvious regression candidate. There's been columns written about it. I mean, anyone who takes that big of a leap as he did last year in completion percentage, I mean, is bound to. And remember last year, week one, he missed 2 wide open touchdowns as well. He really did miss Emmanuel Sanders. Sanders probably had flashbacks of my guy Jimmy G in the Super Bowl, wide open for a 50-yard touchdown, and Allen just flat out missed them. But whatever, it's one game against a really, really good Pittsburgh defense. So I expect him to bounce back this week. I'm still a believer in Allen being a top 2 fantasy QB over the rest of the season. Or is there some concern here, Liz? Because, you know, last year was such a huge jump.
I think we have to like wait and see. Like last week, the Bills entered that competition, I think, as 6.5 point favorites. This week, they're favorited by 3.5. That seems like I agree with that adjustment. If they struggle against the Dolphins on the road, I'm more concerned now. I think, you know, when you mentioned Beasley, I think the question is like, are they going to be down that much that Beasley is going to be, for PPR purposes, involved enough that it makes him fantasy relevant? But in this particular scenario, his matchup against Nick Needham in the slot is certainly the best of the three. So I wouldn't mind using him again. Let's talk about the Dolphins for a second, because Will Fuller is technically back, but he missed practice on Thursday. No reported reason, at least at the time of this recording, as to why, other than it's Will Fuller. Last week, we saw Jaylen Waddle actually not just like, I want to be very clear about this. Jaylen Waddle didn't just score a touchdown, right? This wasn't on 2 targets and he found the end zone. He was 2nd in team targets, tied with Myles Gaskin for 5, and managed to score. Tre'Davious White probably going to follow Devontae Parker. I was encouraged, and I said this on the pod with Matt on Sunday night, that Tua had the bravery to target Parker last week. So that's an evolution. But with the coverage, he's probably not going to see that many looks. And that means, especially if Will Fuller doesn't play or is rusty or doesn't have rapport with Tua, well, Waddle could be in play again. He's only $17 in our Yahoo DFS game, and he's in that like wide receiver 3 category for me.
I wanted to add on to the Beasley thing that the Bills, dating back to the second half of last season, they've been number 1 in neutral pass rate. That's just, they just throw, man. I expect the targets to be, no matter the game script. I love it. This Dable puts the foot on the gas. Waddle passed the eye test. I believe he did have a drop, but still, like, working out of the slot, moving him around. I was impressed. Mike Gesicki, sorry, just quickly, man, it's too bad. His usage was not encouraging at all. He's a drop candidate. Devontae Parker was up there in their air yards shares, but now with Fuller possibly returning, that all bets are off. I don't know what's going to happen there. As you said, Fuller is missing practice, so who knows? But Waddle, I'm with you. I would use him in DFS if you want to. He looks like the real deal to me.
The Patriots are traveling to the Jets in week 2. The Jets get a little bit of a boost. Jamison Crowder is off the COVID list, so he's expecting to return. But do we do we really care? I mean, is it useful knowledge because we know that the left tackle Becton is on IR with the torn MCL, so maybe there's some check down dink and dunk opportunities. Does it negatively affect Elijah Moore anymore? I don't really think any of those players are fantasy. I mean, if you're using Jamison Crowder in week two, you got bigger problems.
Yeah, and Elijah Moore last week, speaking of drops, man, he dropped a perfectly thrown 50-yarder. They're still just $10 in DFS, and man, that preseason hype was so strong. I'm kind of tempted to use him myself, but obviously he's a rookie who just coming off a negative. He finished with negative yards last week, and Corey Davis looks like the number one guy there. But he's capable of playing the slot or outside, so I don't think Crowder's availability is going to affect me too much there as far as Elijah Moore is a dart throw in a tournament play. But man, Corey Davis looks like a nice guy. If you got him in fantasy, you're certainly happy with the usage there. And then the backfield just looks like a mess as expected.
Well, let's talk about backfields because it's not the Jets that is potentially. We know the Jets are a mess. Fine. And I may have been the co-presidents of the Damian Harris fan club heading into this season. Reports that he could have a, quote, reduced role because of that end zone, red zone fumble last week that, let's be honest, like lost in the game. And now there are some whispers that J.J. Taylor, who, by the way, J.J. Taylor, he was a healthy scratch in week one. So if you don't know his name, don't feel bad. He is rostered in, not you, Dalton, I mean our listeners. He is rostered in just 1% of Yahoo leagues. But do you want to know who grabbed him off waivers in a league that we're both in?
You?
Nope. Andy Behrens, of course. He is the sneakiest treasure loaf I have ever dealt with.
Yeah.
Like, if there is a player that I'm like, I write the sleepers column for us. I got this. Nope. It's always like, sorry, rostered, secret treasure loaf, Andy Behrens. Regardless, J.J. Taylor. So this kid's, let's just tell everyone about him so that they can maybe think about it. He's like a smaller guy, 5'5", 185. Pretty quick, like not a second or third gear. I went back and watched a little bit of his tape. He went to Arizona undrafted free agent in 2020 out of there. But he can like get through a crease. He can get, quote, skinny through the hole, if you will. It's hard to imagine that Bill Belichick is going to use this opportunity to like teach Harris a lesson, if you will, when the other rookie, Ramondre Stevenson, also fumbled, right? I mean, I guess the Patriots are favored by 6. So maybe if they get into a comfortable position, as Vegas is expecting they will be, then Harris will take a backseat and Taylor could get some run. But that's the only scenario that I see this like really affecting Harris.
Yeah, with that offensive line in New York could get overwhelmed by the Patriots defense and the game script could just, call for a bunch of runs. I would add J.J. Taylor in deeper leagues because Mike Reese reported this week, he's pretty tuned in New England, that Damian Harris could see a reduced role, but who knows if that was just conjecture. Quick story for you, Liz. The first half of draft season, I was going after A.J. Dillon, but the second half, the guys I was targeting after round 5, the running backs that I was going after were Ronald Jones and Damian Harris, who both lose fumbles and lost their jobs. I mean, possibly right away. I mean, it's just laugh. I think the first and only time I've texted Matt Harmon was on that Thursday night lost fumble because I was hyping up on the pod about Ronald Jones. Dude loses a fumble and doesn't see the field again. And Damian Harris, you said it, cost him the game. And now, but it's okay though, Liz. In the leagues I got Damian Harris, at least I backed him up with Ramondre Stevenson, right? Because if Harris doesn't love it, basically, like, no, he got mothballed too because he lost a fumble. And now it probably is going to be a lot of J.J. Taylor and Brandon Bolden, let's not forget, exists too.
Sure.
So I'm still a Damian Harris believer. He was really good before the fumble. And that team is still built to run with defense and an offensive line. But man, the lost fumbles, it was just super annoying. I mean, injuries are going to happen. Coaches now, who knows, we're just at the whim of what Bill Belichick decides. It's tough, but obviously the matchup looks good against the Jets. So what are you going to do? You get to roll them out there and hope for the best.
This was the year where everyone would roll, like when people would say, well, you can't trust a New England running back. I'd roll my eyes and I'd be like, you guys are stuck in the past. Like this is a new era. You don't know anything. This happens. But then also to that point, I feel like the, you can't trust a blank running back. Now is you can't trust a Kyle Shanahan running back. I want to talk about the 49ers at the Eagles. You and Matt mentioned when you talk about, talking to Matt and hyping your guys and texting him, you talked about, I think you opened probably the whole Tuesday pod with the 49ers, talking about the 49ers. And you had a bunch of amazing stats. It was the Stat Nerd pod. It just got even more complicated, though, Dalton. Like, Trenton Cannon is now here after a one-week stint with the Ravens.
No, I think that's just special teams. And I mean, I know Hasty got picked up in a lot of leagues for some money, actually.
That was all you. You were the person who manifested that, by the way. You were the one who created everybody to, like, I feel like it was you, Dalton. Everybody listened to you and they went and picked up Hasty. It wasn't, I'm not out there telling people to pick up Hasty.
But I'm saying this just in this last Wednesday night NFFC run, Hasty went for some good amount of money and he whiffed on three blocks. And he might, don't be shocked if he's inactive this week. I mean, of course, also don't be shocked if he leads the team in carries. But I mean, it's definitely shenanigans. I get it. It's unpredictable. But what I'm thinking is Gallman was released. Hasty just looked horrible in pass protection. Sermon is apparently in the doghouse. Mostert is out for the whole season.
Yeah.
Yes, Jeff Wilson will eventually return. But remember all that talk about how the Niners having a dream fantasy football playoff schedule? That still exists. So even if you're frustrated with Mitchell, you pick him up and he flops this week. If you have the starting running back, you know, down the stretch on the Niners, that's just going to be, you know, a top 15 type option. So I think Mitchell was worth blowing the fab for. He went for upwards of $900 in a lot of these leagues I was in with 1,000 max. He went for 100 max. I in leagues are still first come, first serve afterward. I was willing to go 100%. For him. Again, it's almost certainly unlikely to work out, but if it does, it's like league winning upside. And this guy looks like a mini Mostert. And Sermon, by the way, can't really fill that role. I mean, he was a kind of a weird draft pick to begin with because he's not nearly as fast as Mostert or all the other backs they've had in the past, you know, from Breida on. And he has a big time injury risk, even if Sermon gets out of the doghouse, which I'm sure he will soon enough. Big injury red flag. So, you know, big workout metrics for Mitchell. We'll see.
Okay, I agree. We'll see. To be honest, I haven't been if people have asked, I've given them my answer. But like, I sort of stayed away from all of San Francisco. Ayuk, the backfield. I did. Well, I will admit, stump for Trey Sermon. I was really excited for him. I like his skill set. He was my number five rookie heading into the draft. And when Shanahan traded up for him, I was like, all right, let's go. And then when Jeff Wilson was lost till midseason, basically, I was like, this has got to be it. So I didn't see the scratch coming. I don't think anyone did. I do still think there's an opportunity for him. It is worth noting that Ayuk is a full participant in practice. It doesn't matter, like, why. Also, guys, like, his hamstring, there was a rumor that he, like, broke curfew. There was a rumor he didn't, like, do well enough. Like, whatever it is, he wasn't on the field. And as far as I'm concerned, well, let me ask you, are you – even as a 49ers homer, if you have equivalent options, are you benching Ayuk or are you starting him this week? Noting that he was
benching
a full participant. Okay, so yeah, we're on
no,
the same
benching
page.
Him.
Like, this is a wait and see for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll give you Mitchell's upside, but I will definitely give you Ayuk's downside right now. No, it's a wait and see approach at this point. I have him 50 for this week. No, I have him 50 for this week. Every league I have him in, which is admittedly plenty, I think I've gone to a different alternative. MVS's of the world, you're going to laugh at me, fourth in air yards last week. I think he's safer than Ayuk. I don't have any clue the amount of reps he's going to get. He was running behind what was his name? I mean, in this last, practice, Craycraw, River Craycraw or something is his name. He was running behind in practice. So I really think it's one of those you have to have a prove it game before you play Ayuk. People with his pedigree and what he did his rookie season, they 99% of the time they turn into superstars. They don't disappear. So don't even think about dropping him. But Shanahan is what he is, and with the hamstring issue and with the practice reports being, I hear you that he's practicing fully, but he's also other reports saying he's running, you know, sixth receiver. So I think the safest move is to bench him.
I mean, there's also a volume issue that no one wanted to talk about over the summer. Like, everyone wants to talk about what an amazing like zone schemes Shanahan runs and how that's so great for running, and how with Trey, clearly the focus was going to be the ground game. But you only had Kittle and Debo and Ayuk, I believe, healthy for like three or four games total last season. And Ayuk's targets weren't great in those outings. So I think there's a volume issue as well. So until the chips fall, I agree that you can't release him, but he's in a wait and see for me. I think, though, if we're talking about prove it situations, Kenneth Gainwell is on his way to proving it. He's also only $14 in our Yahoo game. He outsnapped Boston Scott in the opener, and he logged just 8 fewer touches than Miles Sanders. The 49ers got run over by Detroit's backs. By the way, I did not see DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams being the RB 4 and 5 respectively out after week one. Like, mind blow for that. And so, you know, that was 16 just through the air. San Francisco gave up 16 catches and 120 receiving yards to the Lions backfield.
The 90 plays helped with the onsider and the lost fumble, but and I think Swift's going to be a monster too. But yeah, there could be opportunities again this week. And Miles Sanders was so bad as a receiver last season. Gainwell's going to be a thing, and he's going to be a real thing if Sanders goes down too. I mean, there's big time upside there. Yeah, he looks very impressive. And I'm going to give Laz a hard time until Jalen Hurts' price goes up from $26, man. I mean, he should be one of the top 5 fantasy QBs, regardless of opponent. And he looks so different. Last year, he averaged the highest intended air yards of all QBs. Week one, it was the shortest. So the new coaching staff completely flipped the script, changed the game plan, and he remained obviously a threat on the ground. So love Jalen Hurts.
Over under 45 rushing yards for Jalen Hurts.
Over. I think he's attempted the second most rushing yards behind only Lamar since taking over QB among QBs. So yeah, over.
I have him forecasted for 48 rushing yards. Maybe I should have asked you 50.
Love it.
Let's move on to the Raiders at the Steelers. This week, the Steelers enter as favorites. They obviously were not last week. But let's start with the Raiders because they were the team we last saw since they had the primetime effort. Josh Jacobs, we saw him changing his toes against the Ravens on Monday night, right? We saw him changing his shoes on Monday night against the Ravens. He's still dealing with the toe and ankle issues. He's probably going to play, but he did skip practice on Wednesday and Thursday. It is a short week, so that's some concern. Also, the Steelers, pretty good defense. I just don't see like a lot of right now. The over-under in this game is set at 47. I will take the under on that unless the Steelers just go ham, which I also don't really expect. I think that they're going to lean on the run game. I think this is a nice bounce back spot for, or maybe an announcement spot, if you will, for Najee Harris. TJ Watt is just going to keep, I just think he's going to continue to go ham, especially when you note all of the injuries that, look, the Raiders O-line was already deficient, was already not good. And then they got beat up on Monday night. And now you've got TJ Watt in there. I just don't see how the Raiders are going to put up any points.
Yeah, that defense looks so, so good. It's perfect segue to talking about over-unders because you brought up to our guy, your guy, Eckler, and Najee Harris. He was right. I was wrong. I was way under on Najee Harris's debut. But yes, as you may have heard, he was the only running back to play 100% of the snaps. So better days ahead, but rough, though. He got hit on the backfield like before the behind line of scrimmage, most than any back, too. But yeah, this defense looks like a stay away, if possible, in tiebreakers. Want to avoid because, yeah, they look tough. I'm with you. Jacobs banged up short week after playing overtime, too. 10 a.m. body clock game. It's not an ideal setup, to say the least.
Yeah, that's right. The overtime, the extra quarter of play, too. Yeah. Okay. So if you want to go to BetMGM, I think Dalton and I are both taking the under on 47. Would you agree?
Yes. Whatever the over is on Darren Waller targets, though, what about him only $22 in DFS? I would have a mea culpa on my DFS column this week having to look at that. You know, I realized that I would have highlighted him because 21 wide receivers have a higher salary this week in Yahoo than Darren Waller. So you got to, I mean, use the leverage there at tight end. I mean, it feels like a no-brainer. I mean, where would he go in fantasy drafts? I mean, he would be right there into the first round with Kelce, right? I mean,
maybe I had a Kittle. Definitely had a Kittle. I mean, yeah. I know you had him ahead of Kittle, but
I had him ahead of Kelce even. I'm crazy. I the targets are unreal, man. I mean, you love it.
Yeah, I think it's a great nug. Everyone listen to that. If you're using the leverage, 21 wide receivers ahead of Waller in Yahoo DFS's game, in the Yahoo DFS game. Saints and Panthers. I still kind of can't get over everything that happened on Sunday between the Saints and the Packers, but it's not all good for the Saints. Like, this to me, Marshawn Lattimore, who had a brace on his arm during that game, has a thumb problem. He's out for a few weeks. There's now like a COVID outbreak among the Saints. Last I looked, there were 8 staff, that includes players and coaches, infected. I believe everybody is vaccinated, so there might be a chance that they'll be able to, because of the protocols and the turnaround, to join the team on Sunday. But Michael Thomas is one of them. That's been confirmed. There's 5 assistant coaches that are on the COVID list right now. So whatever good juju they were able to produce in week one, things are sort of spiraling. And there's also some like ish going around the O-line. This is the kind of game to me when you've got these like weird situations cropping up and you don't have your best cornerback, where things can get out of hand and you can see Jameis Winston turn back into a pumpkin.
Yeah, you absolutely could. That's a lot of injuries, and everything went so perfectly week one in that upset. Yeah, I could see it too. The road team, and they're favored too. Panthers are feisty. My biggest question for New Orleans is, what's up with Marquez Callaway, one of the bigger helium guys? Yeah. How about the Saints throwing 5 touchdowns last week and none to him? I mean, he was running the routes, you know, like he was up there among all the receivers with the Saints leaders there. But boy, that's disappointing. So do you trust him in your lineup this week or no go?
No, I don't have him. He is a no-go for me. I just have like a bad feeling about this game. I think it's going to be an upset. You mentioned that the Panthers are frisky. I do think, when you look at this matchup, you think automatically Alvin Kamara, CMC, right? They're the probably in most rankings, they're the 1, 2, or 3 ranked running backs for the week, and for good reason. But there are things around those centerpieces that could ripple out, right? There's a butterfly effect going out on here. And I think Sam Darnold's feeling good. I like Robbie Anderson. I know the volume wasn't big, obviously, last week, but he found the end zone. If there's no Lattimore, I could just see Darnold sort of getting his mojo back. This one is at home. There's, you know, the fans in the stands. And New England is favored by 3.5. I think that you're going to see Darnold air it out a little bit, and he's got that. You also saw the he targeted DJ Moore, but the chemistry wasn't quite right. Moore was not efficient, and I think Robbie Anderson is going to find the end zone for the second straight week and be used kind of like he was previously, frankly, for one more week at least.
I like Robbie Anderson, and, you know, despite the Saints actually allowed the fewest fantasy points to running backs last year, but we've highlighted the injuries, and McCaffrey was he the number one fantasy back last week, even without scoring? I mean, he's just so, so different. And yet his salary's actually less than Kamara in Yahoo DFS. So I think his salary, if he stays healthy, is going to be like mid 40s soon. I mean, he's just so different than all the other backs. Even in half PPR, man, he just racks up the touches. But the injuries are going to help there mitigate an otherwise tougher looking matchup. And if we're the game flow, maybe it will go their way, as you're saying. I mean, maybe New Orleans is due for more of a dud and a Winston game, and McCaffrey could be playing with the lead. But I like the Robbie Anderson call. I mean, the connections there from the rapport back in the Jets days with him and Darnold. That's why I was, you know, concerned when Moore was going 5 rounds ahead of him in some places.
Yeah, our friend Vlad always says or likes to say buy the dip. And I certainly bought the dip on Anderson throughout the draft process. Broncos at Jaguars. I mean, you want to talk about dips, man. Jacksonville's, this is week 2 and we're already getting reports that that Urban Meyer is going to go back to the college ranks. Just 1 week and there's already those rumors. Also getting like alerts on my phone that vets aren't buying in to Urban Meyer. Like, ugh, poor Jacksonville. For a while it was the Chargers that needed to sage their facility. And now I think we need to sage the whole of Florida, but that's a whole nother conversation. I want to talk about the Broncos first. We know Jerry Jeudy. It's been talked about ad nauseum. You talked about it with Matt. Everybody loves Jerry Jeudy. Yay, 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 yay. Well, he's not going to play for a while. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain. So that to me means Tim Patrick. Tim Patrick, by the way, one of the most underrated receivers constantly. Last year, what happened? Oh, the Broncos lose Courtland Sutton early. Who steps up? Tim Patrick. He goes 51 for 742 and 6. There was a bit of a battle between him and Hamler, KJ Hamler, for that third wide receiver spot. But Patrick entered week one ahead of Hamler on the depth chart. He did score the touchdown. He's a nice physical receiver. He's under 20% rostered, only $18 in Yahoo DFS. You've got Trey Herndon of Jacksonville, their cornerback, dealing with a knee issue. And the Jaguars, I mean, I'm burying the lead here, gave up 200 yards to the Texans wideouts last week.
Totally. I like Tim Patrick and KJ Hamler. I mean, Sutton may not be totally back. I mean, he didn't exactly impress even after Jeudy went down week one. So unfortunate, Jeudy injury. So yeah, I'm in on Patrick and Hamler. to varying degrees. Hamler had a bad drop last week, but boy, he can definitely has some potential. Noah Fant, him and Tyler Higbee are the two tight ends that get my biggest fantasy risers after week one with Judy going down. Like him in DFS this week as well. Bridgewater is just, you know, boring but accurate, something that Drew Lock simply wasn't.
No, agreed. What are you doing about James Robinson? I don't. Four fewer
discouraged.
Carries.
Discouraged. Yeah.
Four fewer carries than Carlos Hyde in week one. I don't see game script working in his favor. Certainly not this week. I mean, not in that matchup. I don't know ever. Like, he's kind of in that RB. He is the new RB dead zone. Like, he's RB 25 in our rankings. Like, it's not ADP, but it's rankings. But I'm not at all confident. I don't, frankly, when people ask me James Robinson questions, my kind of pat answer has been like, if you need a flex, I would flex him, but I'm going to assume you need a better, higher upside sort of play here to balance out whatever he might not give you.
Yeah, it is more of just a flex play. I have him as low 30s as my RB this week. I'm with you. Now, the route running was encouraging, and maybe he's going to take over the ETN role, but Carlos Hyde is quite clearly going to be a thing there as long as he's healthy. I mean, the connection back to Ohio State. So, yeah.
Sure, that's a great point, Dalton. Especially if he loses the goal line touchdowns.
Yeah, he signed him. I mean, yeah, he's the guy that signed him, too. I mean, there was no connection to James Robinson. So, yeah, no, the Ohio State connection there. And it's a concern for the season, I think, with James Robinson. He could still be a flex guy with the catches, but, yeah, his ADP might not be great.
Mm-hmm,
might not look great.
Let's move to the PM slate of games. We'll start with, this is going to be an exciting one, the Vikings at the Cardinals. Kyler Murray, give me all the points. Like, I want all the points that this game has to offer. I did find it surprising that Rondale Moore, I was expecting after week one and after the summer of hype, where he, you know, certainly went out there and like there was some proof of concept in his game, he would have a really high added rate, only a plus 4% change in the Yahoo game for Rondale Moore. Does that surprise you?
I wonder, yeah, it does. I wonder if Christian Kirk's big game may have mitigated some of that, but I'm with you for Rondale Moore season long. He should be stashed on all benches, the upside there in any competitive league. Yeah, AJ Green, I mean, it wasn't too encouraging that that's going to, you know, work out there. And there's upside of what if DeAndre Hopkins gets hurt. I mean, Kyler Murray looked great, and it's clear that the last season's second half's problems were that shoulder injury, and it looks explosive. It's weird that they refused to move their receivers around unlike any other team, but Rondale Moore upside, and Christian Kirk looks like another ad too. I mean, he looks in a breakout candidate.
We've just been waiting for that Christian Kirk breakout. I bought into it a couple of times. I liked him coming out of college, but it feels like I think Andy Behrens actually said this, and he was like reading my mind as they were talking about it on the pickups pod earlier in the week. Like every time you get excited about Christian Kirk and you add him, then he like goes out and has a dud. But maybe Cliff has like put a little extra spice in the sauce and we won't see that anymore. Maybe there's some sustainability, certainly because as you mentioned, AJ Green does not look, you know, he looks cooked. And I just really like more. Like if people are looking for upside stashes, that's who I am going to add everywhere I can.
And they're the fastest neutral place team or up there. They were the number one last year and they don't throw to their tight end. And Kirk was a 21-year-old when he entered the league. So it looks like, you know, sometimes it takes just a little bit longer when receivers enter the league younger. So I'm kind of in on I was not before the season, to be clear. I have him on zero of my too many teams that I told you about, zero of him. But I wish that was clearly a mistake. Like Kirk is a guy, a nice flyer to have on benches. Now I'm with you with Moore too, but I think Kirk is interesting for sure. AJ Green could be dropped in my opinion.
From Christian Kirk to Kirk Cousins, I do find this interesting. So the Cardinals are favored by 3.5. The Vikings, we know, are going to want to run. They're going to want to play keep away, all of that. Their defense did not look like it improved in week one. I think Kirk is going to have to run. We know he's got a little bit of mobility. He, in super flex leagues, which I love, more and more people are playing, and it makes me so happy to get all these super flex questions now that there's so much talent at the position. I think Kirk is like inside the top 15. Like he's another one of these, especially in this matchup where we're expecting a lot of points and he could be chasing a little bit. And he's coming off of forget the fifth quarter in OT last week. I think before that he had already thrown about 330 yards. He's only $30 in Yahoo DFS, where Kyler Murray, again, worth the money, is $37. So Kyler Murray is everyone's QB1. Yahoo consensus except yours. He's your QB2. Everyone, the rest of us all have him QB1. Whatever. We're splitting hairs. But he is the third most expensive in our daily game behind Tom Brady and Josh Allen at $37. So there's a $7 difference, which is, you know, a decent amount between Kyler and Kirk in this matchup.
Yeah, I'm not taking a stand there. He could be my number one very, very easily there. Same tier for me. Actually, there's a lot of interesting ones like Herbert and Brady are going to go crazy. But given the alternatives. So Kirk Cousins is a better real life player than fantasy for a couple reasons. One is obviously the no running. But the other is Minnesota is the opposite of what I said about Arizona. They're the slowest team in the NFL. So this matchup absolutely could help mitigate that, facing the faster paced Arizona that should theoretically put up points too. So if you force Captain Kirk to throw the ball more than usual, absolutely, then he becomes a fantasy option. I mean, his YPA last year was like 8.2 or something. I mean, he's a good player. And obviously there's Jefferson and Thielen there. Jefferson was robbed of that touchdown last week. But sure, I like Kirk as a QB contrarian play in DFS.
You mentioned Tom Brady. Let's get to it. I mean, these last couple of games are super exciting. Falcons at Buccaneers. I think Vegas is, by the way, being a little tongue-in-cheek with us because TB, Tampa Bay, is favored by 12. And the over-under is 52.
Perfect. Works perfectly.
So talk about your guy, Rojo. I think he's starting.
Oh, boy. What am I supposed to say? I have no clue what's going to happen. I mean, he could go crazy. One thing I will say is everyone, yes, this does appear to be a smash spot. It's 12-point favorites at home. And I love that, you know, the coach already saying, you know, he's going to start. So, you know, hopefully he's trying to build some confidence. And he absolutely could be at RB1 this week. But Atlanta actually allowed the second fewest rushing yards to running backs last season. So they weren't maybe the best matchup as it appears, because Rojo doesn't add much as a receiver. And Brady is going to go nuts. He throws the ball in the end zone as much as any quarterback not named Russell Wilson. I'm stealing one of your notes. This is Mike Evans' turn. I feel like Brady's just going to pick his guys. Like, yep. Oh, last week he didn't get his. It's going to be as easy as that. Like, I know that just seems like a narrative that's silly. Oh, no, I think with Brady, he's going to be as simple as that. Oh, he didn't get, it wasn't his turn last week. So now it's going to be Evans' turn. I do. And I'll counter you. I'll give you a contrarian QB. I'll count you. You said Kirk Cousins, and I'll raise you a Matt Ryan. No one wants to use him after last week when he looked absolutely awful. And Tampa Bay looks like a tough matchup on paper. But let me tell you, Tampa Bay was the number one pass funnel defense last year, and Dallas threw it 58 times week one. Having a really strong run defense means the other team has to throw the ball a lot. So Matt Ryan's going to have to throw the ball 60 times this week. So give me Calvin Ridley, give me Kyle Pitts, and give me a dirt cheap Matt Ryan rostered nowhere in DFS.
I have no desire to touch Matty Ice, but you do make a really good point about the funnel defense. And just to piggyback on top of that, Sean Murphy Bunting on IR with that elbow issue, Ross Cockrell, man, he's 30 years old. Like, and he is a sieve. So I feel like this could be, you know, it was a little exciting. Kyle Pitts, like, okay, Calvin Ridley. I think there's a large possibility that they both break out. Like, I don't want to say that Calvin Ridley hasn't already broken out, but like break out in this new look Falcon squad in week two against the Buccaneers.
Kyle Pitts was, the air yards were there, the inline routes were there. Like, it's all the stuff you wanted to see from a tight end. I'm encouraged moving forward. Having said that, though, Arthur Smith, I was like all in, and Tennessee turned into a disaster without him, as feared. But man, he was running the ball on 3rd and 10 a couple times and not doing the play action. And it was a difference between being a play caller and a head coach. And sometimes the same person's not great at both. And I fear that might be the latter there, but I'm still going to remain encouraged about Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley, but definitely paying attention to this Arthur Smith situation. And it's also possible that Matt Ryan might just be cooked, but then it's like, boy, Kyle Pitts better be the best tight end in the history of the world for passing on Justin Fields and Mac Jones. Take a tight end over those two QBs is.
You also make the point though, like even if a play caller even if there's a big difference between an OC and an HC, like, he's still an offensively minded guy. And if they're down, like, there is an offensive coordinator in the pros who is more than two scores or, I don't know, even two scores down that isn't like, we need to pass, right? Like, that's just how it goes. And I do think that Tampa Bay has enough firepower, as they demonstrated, not just in week one, but all of 2020, to, like, put another team in a hole fast. So I just think that logic, like, not even getting cute or fancy or savvy, dictates that Arthur Smith is gonna be like, all right, well, go out there and like chuck it, man. I don't know what to tell you. Speaking of chucking it, oh my gosh, this is the game I am the most excited for. And it's not just because of Eckler's edge, but the Cowboys at the Chargers, to me, second highest over under of the week at 55.5, going to be a points bonanza. Cowboys defense, like, in bad shape. DeMarcus Lawrence out, Randy Gregory out. You've got Michael Gallup, that's obviously an offensive player on the short-term IR. You've got Zach Martin returning. What does this all mean? It means to me that there are going to be a ton of passing opportunities for a nice, narrow passing tree between CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, and you're going to see Zeke not having to get in there and block, but run like hell, and also catch a couple of passes.
Man, so Cowboys probably going to have home field advantage in this game is my guess. CeeDee Lamb, just 23 in Yahoo DFS. Fire him up, especially with Gallup out of there, Amari Cooper an option. But what about Eckler? I mean, just insane. Zero targets, but the goal line carries. I mean, just so bizarre. Football. That's football.
So, it's interesting how both of these teams in week one had similar situations, because we saw Zeke in there blocking because of Martin, and obviously against the Bucs defensive front, like, they're trying to keep Dak clean. Well, I asked Austin in Eckler's Edge, and that episode went live on Thursday, so go check it out. First thing I asked him was like, bro, what's up with no targets in the passing game? Not a single ball, like Joe Lombardi, Alvin Kamara with over under 100 catches. What's the deal? And he was like, well, if you haven't taken a notice, like, Chase Young is a pretty tough defender. Like, the Washington football team can bring the heat, and our job is to keep our quarterback safe. That is my number one job. So he said he was in there chipping nonstop, and that they just, like, believed in, they wanted to keep Justin Herbert in the pocket. They wanted to keep him clean, and they wanted to give him enough time to reach Williams, who I know you said you really liked his usage in the opener, and feed Keenan Allen, and that was it. But I think it's encouraging that we saw Austin Eckler at the goal line. That, to me, coming off of that hamstring scare, means that they feel like he is healthy. And he, by the way, told me personally that he was healthy and he didn't injure himself on Thursday. He actually felt a tweak on Monday and then was just sort of like pulled himself from practice because it was the same hamstring that bothered him the season before. And so it was like, precaution. It was truly precautionary. He was fine. He hit the goal line, and he is guaranteeing receptions this week because he's not anticipating that he'll need to, especially, as I've mentioned, all of the defensive woes in Dallas, to block nearly as much or to chip nearly as much. So some mirroring between Zeke and Austin in week one. We should probably see some mirroring in week two. By the way, they're like ranked number RB10 and RB11 in like the Yahoo consensus rankings, by the way.
I have your Eckler actually 7 this week. I'm bullish, Sean. I love so many points to be scored in this matchup. And yeah, I think the targets are going to be there. I mean, Herbert targeted the running back quite a bit last week. And then Mike Williams was my the bold prediction went with. I said he's going to be a top 15 fantasy wideout this week. I think his ECR is outside the top 30. Man, 12 targets. I should have got him in more leagues. It really does look like he's going to take over the Michael Thomas role in Lombardi offense. He's the guy with more upside than even Keenan Allen because of his red zone ability. I know he's disappointed before and is always hurt because he's jumping for those deep balls, but they used him, you know, sometimes a lower A-dot is a good thing. And in this case, it is for Mike Williams. If Mike Williams sees close to double digit targets a game, he's going to not just be a top 15 receiver this week. He's going to be a top 15 fantasy wideout all season with Justin Herbert throwing the ball.
I also think I love that take. And I think as dusty as people want to believe it to be, Jared Cook in this offense, like tied to Justin Herbert, and particularly in this game, we keep talking about the points that we anticipate being scored, is an absolute stream. Like, he ran 28 routes in week one. That was the tight end 7 for the week. Like, we love that. This is a really friendly offense. He is $13 in Yahoo DFS, and he is only 32% rostered right now.
Yep. Like him as well. There'll be a lot of points in this game for sure, man. Back and forth. I could really, really stack this game on both sides in DFS for sure. Mike Williams, a former number 7 overall pick, let's not forget, and playing for a new contract, that fifth year guy. Ooh, man, I wish I had more of him. It was so obvious in hindsight.
Titans at Seahawks. We're anticipating, at least I'm anticipating, that Ryan Tannehill rebounds from the 6 sacks, 5 that came at the hands of Chandler Jones in week one, Taylor Lewan's exposure, if you will. Because let's be honest, like, the Seahawks don't have a defensive line that's known for generating that much pressure, at least in the current era.
Yes. I actually said fade Derrick Henry, though, in DFS in my column in this. Seahawks did have a number 7 run defense DVOA, and it's just so game script dependent. And I'm worried about this lack of play action and Todd Downing now calling the plays, no Arthur Smith. I mean, Tennessee want to buy low. They should play better for sure. But man, you go into Seattle, when's the last time they've had fans there? I personally ranked Chris Carson ahead of Derrick Henry, and he's obviously a lower salary in DFS. So, I mean, I would go that route. I think the Seattle's going to be the team playing with the lead in the second half here. And, you know, and Henry's, I mean, what do you think? Is that too much? Is that going too far?
Listen, Dalton, the thing I love most about your analysis, and honestly, the thing I love doing, the reason I love doing this show with you the most is because you really believe in your takes and you're not afraid. Like, I think a lot of us hedge, if I'm being totally honest. Like, this is a peek behind the curtain. I think a lot of us are like, oh, I just don't want to get, I don't want to get like flamed on social. So I'm just, I'll be like, this is the floor option, but you don't do that. And I appreciate it. And it always makes me think. So I mean, I don't think I'm going to do that in my rankings, but I do think, as someone who has Carson rostered a lot of places, I think it's an interesting take. I do think that the Titans are obviously going to try to play keep away. You mentioned like the differential, but the Seahawks are favored by 6. So, you know, the Titans, I think, are going to try to start with Derrick Henry. Is Derrick Henry special enough of a player that in the first quarter, when his usage is the highest, which is most likely, will he be able to do enough? Probably. And that's why I'll lean towards him. But I do understand, I would not be surprised if the production was close, I'll say that, between Henry and Carson. I think this is more to me telling about whether or not the receivers add real value to the Titans, because we are anticipating Tannehill, both of us are, is going to have to pass, right? Like, and this is a guy who had his biggest success, like, I don't know, with 100, going under 100 yards, and it was all Derrick Henry, right? Like 14 pass attempts, 20 pass attempts. Like, that was what we saw when the Titans started to like raise their profile. Again, you're right, under Arthur Smith. But I think we're going to have to see if Tannehill has it and if Julio adds something, because this should be the week where Julio does get more action, especially if A.J. Brown has been dealing with that like soft tissue stuff for a minute, isn't totally right, or like re-aggravate something in the game.
Yeah, and as many people pointed out, for Julio, he's never going to be healthier than week one now. And I guess the same should be true week two. But I don't know if that totally worked, considering he might have been rusty with sitting out so much time. But I think you're rolling with the receivers, no question, in a game that could develop in them having to pass a lot in the second half. And that's a narrow tree. I mean, who's the third guy there? And Ferkser is not developing as fantasy managers had hoped. So yeah, you're rolling with A.J. Brown and Julio. And then on the flip side, I just got to say, man, poor Rashad Penny. It didn't take him the injury problem. Guy was Mostert, and then Penny already out in the first week. So yeah, that's again another one though for Carson. It's going to get the heavy workload.
Yeah, I think probably I would keep an eye on Alex Collins. Honestly, he had really good reports out of camp over the summer. Buzzy player, familiarity obviously with the team. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him have a decent showing, especially if the Seahawks, like if the Seahawks are leading the way we anticipate, then there should be a good amount of resting, trying to bubble wrap Carson because of his durability issues and letting the number 2 guy run. I anticipate that'll be Collins. So I have a feeling that Collins will be on the waiver wire pickups ad heading into, you know, Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday of next week. All right. This is the game that everyone's excited by. Like, let's just get to it. It's the Chiefs at Ravens, the highest over-under of the week at 56. We are expecting, let's talk about the Chiefs first. On defensively, we're expecting Honey Badger to be back. So now that's all we need to talk about the Chiefs, because honestly, everything else is about the Ravens and how they're going to manage to keep up here. There is so, I don't know, like, talk about the charmed city. There is a curse on Baltimore right now. There's another injury. Cornerback Chris Westry tore his meniscus. The secondary has been decimated by injuries. We know about the backfield hurting. Also, what is the position that is most important to this, other than the quarterback, to this squad? It's running the ball. And now Tyson Williams had 35 snaps in week one. Latavius Murray had 21. The team elevated Devonta Freeman, who, by the way, Latavius Murray beat out in New Orleans, right? Like, Latavius Murray beat out Devonta Freeman. Freeman was cut first. Murray didn't want any more money than the Saints were willing to give him. So he goes to Baltimore. He's getting onto speed. 21 snaps compared to Tyson Williams, 35. We saw Tyson Williams miss a couple of times. Like, the timing between Jackson and the backfield was off. They were clearly trying to get on the same page. And now you've got Greg Roman saying he's going to rotate guys. I don't buy that, honestly. Like, I think that this is going to be a backfield led by Latavius Murray and Lamar Jackson.
And they lost Ronnie Stanley, too, their left tackle. That's certainly not ideal. Williams was just totally disappeared after he whiffed on a block on Monday
night. Makes sense.
Yeah, and Murray could be the guy. Of course, Jackson will take a lot of the goal line touchdowns, and it could just delve into a committee situation. I'll tell you one thing. I'm not worried about Freeman or Le'Veon Bell getting into the mix. I do think it is one of those, or it is those two, Williams and Murray. And then, Sammy Watkins, it'll be interesting to see if he's just his usual week one blow up and then disappear, or if it's different now in Baltimore. But yeah, there's a lot of injuries in Baltimore, man. They remind me of my Niners last season. I mean, it's just one after the other there. I mean, their left tackle going down now is it's a major issue.
So where are you ranking Jackson with all of this?
Oh, he's right there. So, I mean, there's so many good options, as we said. Like, even Russell Wilson's going to go crazy. I think he's my fifth QB this week. I mean, he's totally fine. I know the fumbles last week, but he runs more than any QB, and he's going to be their entire offense. I mean, he's going to kick all the touchdowns. Yeah. The loss of running backs there may even help his fantasy value. So, no, I mean, Jackson's a tier one fantasy QB for me every week, pretty much.
I really wish it wasn't a short week, because I'd love to see him at his peak powers, given the unpeak powers that the whole offense will be at. You know, I just like to see him be able to like really take the load, but this is an exciting one. It's going to be a good matchup. And last time Patrick Mahomes faced the Ravens, he was the QB1 for the week. So I don't doubt that he can do that again.
Yeah, his career numbers in September are silly. He's undefeated, no interceptions, a million touchdowns. I'm curious about my guy, Mecole Hardman, who clearly ran like the number two receiver. The routes were up, but the targets did not follow.
Yeah.
It just looks so money in Kansas City if you have just the three guys. I mean, it's just all Kelce, Hill, and Mahomes. It throws it to, and he's the best QB. So it's a nice little setup there if you do have those guys, because even Hardman winning the number two job, it looks like he's not able to produce any fantasy value. You know, not unlike, I guess, what Sammy Watkins was like the last few years, too.
Last game of the slate. It is Monday night. The Packers looking to get right against the Lions. They will host Detroit, and they are favored by 11.5. Things already not looking good for the Lions. Not only did they lose Okuda, their first round pick, cornerback, last week, they're not, quote, optimistic about Tyrell Williams for week two because of a concussion. Yikes.
And both their backs are banged up, too. The Jamal Williams dealing with a chest injury. DeAndre Swift dealing with his groin injury. Obviously not ideal given it's a Monday night game, and DeAndre Swift is a must start if he plays. So you got to just pay attention to that. Nothing we can add to that now. This is a situation to monitor.
Jamal Williams is getting on the field. Jamal Williams is all about this revenge game.
Oh, yeah, definitely a revenge. Yeah, he looked good too. TJ Hawkinson, I have ranked as this my third fantasy tight end moving forward ahead of Kittle, just because, I mean, he's just going to get all the targets. I mean, just all the targets there. And then on the flip side, Green Bay. I already mentioned my guy MVS. Aaron Rodgers, he's probably just going to have a massive, gigantic, huge bounce back right after an F game. Or was that a symptom of a bigger problem? And all of summer, him missing actually matters. And this team is flawed. Bakhtiari's not back at left tackle. Their defense was never as good. So, yeah. So what's your take here? Because I could see it either way. I could see them blowing them out and they're back, you know, as a bad week one. Who cares? They've had their duds before. Or, oh, no, the Packers are in a lot of trouble. You know, I could see either.
I am anticipating that if ever there was a bounce back spot, this is it. So it will be illuminating. I'm going to proceed as though week one was a blip and move from there. I do think the biggest winner, whether they're losing or not, is A.J. Dillon. Like, that guy should be rostered. I was surprised he was as rostered as he was, honestly. Like, if Green Bay does roll and bounce back, we saw the 49ers run all over the Lions last week, put up all kinds of, like, rushing yards against Detroit. And Aaron Jones, I think, like, we know also that LaFleur loves to, like, work in a tandem backfield. He's not always like just a one guy. And, you know, obviously he drafted AJ Dillon. So there's some fondness, I think, there, especially with Williams out the door. I think that AJ Dillon could have like a really nice RB3 week, right? He's in that flex range for me. I like him in DFS as well. I think that's the player that I'm going to be keeping an eye on from like a moving forward standpoint. But if they fall apart, then we gotta talk about it. Then we have to like dissect why and maybe be willing to change our opinions about a lot of things.
I'm with you with Dillon being a flex play. I have him right around Jamal Williams. The Lions allowed the most fantasy points to running backs last year, and the game script could be highly favorable. It's 12.5 point favorite. So Dillon is definitely an option. And the Lions are coming off a crazy week. That saw him play, you know, run nearly 90 plays, getting that onside kick and the lost Debo fumble. But Goff made it happen. But man, it's so weird, that situation there with the wide receivers, especially if Tyrell Williams has to miss this game, which it looks like that is thin there. So Hawkinson and Swift, man, every game looking at double digit targets.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, I mean, I'm not a Lions fan, so I can say that, and I have a lot of Jamal Williams everywhere. So that is going to do it for Dalton and I this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at @LizLoza_FF. That is at Dalton Del Don. You can follow the whole crew at Yahoo Fantasy. Matt and TJ Hernandez will be back with a bonus Saturday DFS pod tomorrow. Until then, good luck, and we're out.